Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world. This is Talk Is Jericho.
Talk Is Jericho.
Starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. And it's Friday.
It's Friday.
The remedy for boredom has arrived. The People's Podcast is here. Let's go for a ride. He's the man called Sting. The man called Sting. He's the man called Kofi. And he's gonna win a trophy. All right. It's Friday here. I love the man called Sting, the famous entrance song for Sting in the 90s, written by Jimmy Hart. One of the most hilarious tunes ever. Love it, man. I also love the fact that Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville are coming up. Two of the hottest up-and-coming stars in WWE, NXT. And we're going to talk about what life is like as part of NXT and the WWE Performance Center down in Orlando, Florida. Neither of these guys is new to wrestling, though. They're definitely not rookies. They're just new to the WWE. They've been working for 10 years apiece, decades of experience. Adrian is from Newcastle, England. Sami Zayn from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. From opposite parts of the world, but they're the best of friends, and they're great, great performers. You're going to be hearing a lot about them, a lot about what they got coming up on December 11th. They have the NXT R Evolution Takeover, only available on the WWE Network. They're facing each other for the NXT Championship. You are not going to want to miss it. Also, wait until you hear how they kill time backstage and on the road. Things are a lot different these days. There's Archie Comics involved. I'm not kidding. We'll get into their gimmicks, how they got their names, and we'll find out how the Ole chant first started for Sammy. Plus, we'll talk to new Fozzy bass player Jeff Rouse. He's a Seattle legend. He's got so many cool stories to tell about his early days in rock and roll and about how he's ingratiated himself into the Fozzy lineup. But first, you know what I have to do here. I have to say thanks to you for using my links every time you shop at Amazon. Easiest way to support the show, and it's the easiest way to support me. Every time you use one of my Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a couple bucks to this show to help us cover production costs. I got links for Amazon USA, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada. Just go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then hit the Talk Is Jericho button. You get all kinds of cool stuff on Amazon, like, for instance, the new Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War, debuted in the top 50 on the Billboard charts. It's our best record ever. Biggest seller, highest charter. You must go check it out. It's a perfect stocking stuffer. It's a perfect Christmas gift. You got to go check it out. Or my new book, The Best in the World at What? I Have No Idea. Third time New York Times bestseller. And also people are saying it's the best Chris Jericho book out of the three that I've done. Another great holiday gift. See, you don't even have to go to the store. Just go to Amazon and buy Chris Jericho merchandise and your family will be so excited and so happy. Hey, listen, you can buy whatever you want, though. You can buy furniture. You can buy clothes. You can buy, I think there's probably paintings on there. I bought some cool bracelets on Amazon the other day. A fridge. You need a fridge? You can get that on Amazon. You can find anything you want, and you just got to use the Amazon links. You can buy what you want. It won't cost you anything extra. No hidden fees or extra charges. So if you happen to be doing some Amazon shopping, which you will because it's Christmas, you can help out this show and help out me in the process. Easy way to get your holiday shopping done. I'm telling you right now, you got to go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then hit the Talk is Jericho button. Bookmark it as well so you can get those links in one easy click. All right. Hanging out here at the House of Blues in New Orleans, midway through the Cinder Block Party with Texas Hippie Coalition and Shaman's Harvest. We're rolling through the states, and we're getting ready to do a week in Florida, the Destin, Florida, Club LA tonight. Aqua in the Rock Bar Room in Jacksonville tomorrow on Saturday. We hit Dixie's Roadhouse in Cape Coral, Florida on Sunday the 7th. Then on the 9th, we're hitting Gainesville. On the 10th, we're doing Fort Lauderdale, House of Blues in Lake Buena Vista on the 11th. And the last night of the tour is December 12th in Tampa at the State Theater. Don't miss the tour that everyone is talking about. People are having an absolute blast on these shows. A lot of THC fans, a lot of Shaman Harvest fans, and a lot of Fozzy fans getting together for one big rock and roll regatta, one big rock and roll family reunion. Come check it out and hear your favorite tunes. Let me know what you think on the Twitter at Fozzy Rock. And then next year, if you're in the UK or Germany or Switzerland or France, you can come be a part of the Cinderblock Party World Tour 2015 with the Dirty Youth, one of the hottest up-and-coming bands in the UK right now. That starts March 4th in Belfast, Ireland. We're going to Cork, Dublin after that. Then we're hitting the rest of the UK. We got shows in Manchester, Glasgow, London, Bristol, Brighton, Southampton, Exeter, everywhere. And then we're going to Bochum, Germany, Mannheim, Munich, heading over to Pratteln, Switzerland, Paris, France. You can get all information about all these shows on FozzyRock.com. And you can pick up VIP tickets as well. It's one of the best VIP experiences you'll ever have. You won't be disappointed if you do the package. Come say hi, hang out with us, take some pictures, ask some questions, do all the things you want to do and have a Fozzy experience. That's another great Christmas gift as well. You will not be disappointed. Also, you will not be disappointed by Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville coming up soon. But first, we're going to have a little conversation with the new bass player in Fozzy, the amazing Jeff Rouse, one of the coolest guys I've ever met. And I think you'll agree. We're here with Jeff, my buddy Jeff Rouse, who is now the new bass player in Fozzy, which has been super cool. How have you liked it so far?
It's been awesome, man. I mean, I think obviously you can tell I like to run around and jump around on stage a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Fit was a real easy fit.
Yeah, it was, and it's funny too because whenever you get a new guy in the band or join a new band, it takes a while to get kind of the stage chemistry. But like you and I have a lot of fun on stage now.
Yeah.
Starting like we have the same attitude, like just have fun.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, that's why I put on a show.
Yeah.
You know, but also have fun. I mean, you're obviously playing for people, but it, you know, for me from the beginning, I always played music because I like to play music and I love being on stage with cool people and, mm-hmm. and, 10 or 10,000 is what you say, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's our motto, you know. And yeah. Some nights you get that, you know, but the vibe has to be the same every time. And I mean, it's always fun to look over, like if I'm on one part of the stage, you're always kind of on the other part of the stage, you know, or on the ego riser. And I mean, that's cool. It's like that's the way it should be. Everybody on stage is a star.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I mean, it's, you know, it's kind of like blocking, I guess, and acting, but it's not acting, but
yeah, you're right. You that's
know,
a good point.
But it's, you know, I remember going and watch a lot of my favorite bands, and everyone moved around. All my favorite bands. I wasn't much of a shoegazer thing. Maybe in some parts of my life, I liked some of the Oasis stuff and a lot of bands like that, and where the music speaks for itself. But generally, if I get on stage, I like to run around.
But it's funny because you mentioned that the shoegazing thing, but that's kind of a staple of like the grunge quote unquote era from Seattle. And you're from Seattle.
Sure.
And you kind of came up in that scene. Is that kind of was that true, or is that kind of just a cliche?
I don't know. Maybe it might be a little bit of a cliche because growing up and seeing all those bands, it never felt like that.
Mm-hmm.
To me. I remember going to see Soundgarden. The first show Ben Shepherd played with them after Hero left, they played Bumbershoot. And Ben came out in an army helmet and was prancing around like a soldier and like people were stage diving and he's kicking them. And
yeah.
So, I mean, Chris had a lot of duties, you know, a lot of singing because in Soundgarden songs, there's not a lot of dead time. So as a singer, and you're playing guitar, you can't run around unless you have on like a Kipwinger headset or something like that. So, you know, that's just one example, but Band was just a madman. And like, and I remember seeing, you know, playing with and seeing Nirvana, there was no shoegazing going on at all. Like Kurt was crazy. And
Grohl's always nuts being the kit.
And Alice, you know, like Jerry and Lane. I mean, those guys were monsters. I mean, on the Lollapalooza tour that Alice did, they had that huge net up in the front. I remember Lane would crawl up that net. So I don't remember ever feeling like that. There was always a manic energy with those
some
bands.
Action,
you know, it wasn't your classic Iron Maiden kind of stuff. You know, it was a whole new thing, and the crowd was as much of a part of it as the bands were. It's like when you would go to shows, it was a thing.
Mm-hmm,
you know, like. And not only that, the crowd was much a part of it, but you would go to a Nirvana show or a Soundgarden show or Mudhoney, and all the guys from those other bands would be in the pit also.
Mm-hmm, hanging out, right? Dining.
Or, you know, I mean, it was an event, and
it seemed like there was a real, like, a camaraderie amongst that scene. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think in L.A., we were watching Decline of the Western Civilization, the metal years, last night for a bit, and there was so many bands, but it was like a lot of competition between band and band and band and band. Whereas mm-hmm. the Seattle scene, everybody was kind of friends with everybody else, mm-hmm. you know, and everyone supported everybody else. At least that's the way it kind of seems when you look at the lineage.
It was like that, and it still is. And I came from a town 45 minutes south of that. So by the time I came in and started seeing those bands, it was me and my one buddy Steve. We got flyers. We'd start going to shows. We got a flyer to see Mother Love Bone, Alice in Chains, Black is Black, and Tramp Alley on Halloween at the Kent Skate King in 1987. Still have the flyer. And I remember me and him walked in. We didn't know anybody else, but we immediately knew, like, wow, this is a whole crowd of, like, this is us. Mm. And it was so easy to make friends. Dudes, chicks, didn't matter. Like, and you'd get a flyer that show. You go to the next show. You'd start seeing these bands. And that's how I got into a band. And that's, you know, instantly I'm like, I got to be a part of this somehow.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but I lived south. So there was a little bit of a disconnect back then because the old guard is what I call them, those, you know, like the Soundgarden, all these guys. They're maybe just a few years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like I jumped in the scene and me and Chris Cornell were, you know, leg wrestling or something, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, over the years, I guess, and just being around, I did meet all those guys. And there was a sense of camaraderie of mm-hmm. all those guys, and they really looked out for each other. And
tell us about the first gig, or not the first gig that you played, but you played
right
a show with Nirvana on their first gig.
Yeah. So I joined this band on a Tuesday, if I remember correctly, and the band didn't even know I was showing up. I met the drummer outside of a strip club the night before, and he was wasted, and he's like, "Yeah, we need a bass player. Bring your gear down." He didn't remember, so I showed up with my gear the next night. And I'm like, "Hey, I'm here." And they had no idea. Like, what? Okay, cool. Yeah. But instantly I was in the band. Like, I
just played
the
song. Had gear.
And yeah, exactly. And the drummer's mom booked this club called Legends in Tacoma. And she came in that night. She was a wonderful person, Mary. And she's like, "Do you guys want to play a show Friday night?" We're like, "Yeah, all right, great." She's like, "We don't have songs." She's like, "Oh, you just got to play 20 minutes. And we played a Dead Kennedys cover. And we wrote four songs. 21 Bimbos, Spider Soup. Oh, God, I can't remember the other two songs.
Yeah.
But it was with Nirvana and the Melvins and this band called The Machine at Legends on Friday. And it was on the Bleach tour. And I had never even heard Nirvana.
So it was your band's first gig opening for Nirvana.
Yes.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. And it was a big deal.
And you hadn't even heard of them, you said?
No, we went out and bought the record. And listened to him, and our singer put it on. The first song's Dive. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. It's kind of slow.
Mm-hmm.
I remember him walking over the record player and turning up the speed on the record to make it sound doo-doo-doo-bee-doo-doo-doo-bee. And then as soon as the vocals came in, we're like, "What the hell's going on? Oh, my God." But it was an amazing experience. The crowd hated us. Because we kind of were like a punkier, weird Chains Addiction, funky thing. Didn't mm-hmm. match the bands. You know, I mean, we're out here, we play every night, and there's local openers all the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really weird.
Yes.
That was me. You know, at that show. And but we played a Dead Kennedys punk rock cover at the end, and the crowd got it. And
but did you get a chance to see Nirvana? Did you meet any of those guys that night?
I didn't meet them, but I watched them, and really cool thing happened at the beginning of the shows. Back then, there's no barricade.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes we play and there's no barricade, but this show was one of those things. About 1,200 people there. So people were pushed right up against the front. Nirvana went into the first note, and 100 people were on stage, stage diving. I mean, that's how it was back
then. That was the vibe, yeah.
So Kurt stopped playing. I'm like, oh my God, what the fuck is he going to freak out with? He's talking to Chris, and they're like, what the fuck? And they kind of put their guitars down, and they go down and grab the monitors and pull them about 10 feet back to the drum riser. Mm-hmm. So they're just standing right up against the drum riser, and they just let the crowd stage dive the whole show.
Wow. You
couldn't even see the band.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was just like, I'm like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
It was, you know, and it was a life-changing moment.
That's really, really cool, man. Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things where you just never know. You can guess, okay, this band is going to be huge, but to think they were going to totally change, you know, society even.
Yeah.
You know, Paul Stanley said that, he said, good bands, or great bands sell albums, iconic bands change culture or something along those lines, and that's exactly what happened.
It's absolutely correct. I would have never guessed it that night.
Mm-hmm.
Nevermind hadn't come out. You know, they're still on the Bleach tour, but I was at that show at the OK Hotel when Nirvana played Smells Like Teen Spirit for the very first time.
Oh, wow.
And it was this cool venue that was right underneath the Viaduct in Seattle, and it was a big deal. And it was Grohl's first local show with them, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And they played that song that night. And I remember that because I knew that all their songs so well. I'm like, what is this song? And I couldn't understand what the hell he was saying. And now you see footage and you hear stories about that. And he didn't even have the lyrics done. He's really just mumbling.
Yeah.
But it was just that night, I'm like, okay, something's different here. And then when you heard the record, when I remember hearing Smells Like Teen Spirit on the radio for the first time, I'm like, oh, well, I get that now.
Right.
That's, you know.
Well, you know, talking about iconic bands, I mean, another iconic band is Guns N' Roses, and obviously you spent years and years and years playing in Loaded with Duff McKagan, who it must have been kind of funny because you play bass in a band with the iconic bass player from Guns N' Roses who switched over to guitar.
That was weird.
Yeah.
I remember getting, I mean, he called me.
Because you're kind of like, you're really well known in the Seattle scene, and Duff is also from Seattle.
Sure. I mean, I guess I'm well known just because I've never went away. You know, but Duff, cool dude. He got sober, he moved back to Seattle, raised his kids, and went back to school, but he would still go to shows.
Mm-hmm.
Not only would he go to shows, but he would stand right up front.
Right.
You know, he's not afraid. I mean, like, that's part of him. So he would see our band play, me and Mike Squires, and Mike Squires. So Duff decided he wanted to make a record anyway because he was just at home. So he wrote these songs and he'd get different guys to come in and play on the record.
Right.
Not knowing what he was going to do with it. So Mike Squires, a guitar player from Loaded, who was also in this band called Alien Crime Syndicate with me at the time. So Mike went in to record a couple guitar solos. And I guess Duff had got an offer from this promoter in Japan saying, hey, can you guys come over and play some of these shows? But Duff didn't have a band. So Mike said, hey, you need to call Rouse. And so all of a sudden my phone rings, like, Rouse. I'm like, yeah, hey, it's Duff. I go, hey, what's going on? Explains. He's like, why don't you come down on Friday or whatever day it was, and let's check it out and see if it works. And my wife at the time had this beach house. Her family has a beach house in Oregon, and I'm like, I got to. So me and her went at the beginning of the week. I went down there for 3 days. I'm like, I was so stressed out. I'm like, fuck, I got to play bass with that. So I remember
because he's got such a distinct sound. Absolutely. I mean, he's a great bass player,
incredible bass player. So I took it real seriously, just as, you know, I pretty much do anything. And I got a set list, and I went down. I got a set list from the drummer, not asking Duff. So when I showed up at rehearsal, Duff's like, well, what'd you learn? I'm like, well, let's just play the set.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, okay. So we played the set, and
was there any GNR tunes in that set?
No.
Okay.
At that point, we're not doing any Guns songs or anything. Just all songs and a couple covers. Like, I think we did I Want to Be Your Iggy Pop song. I Want to Be
Your Dog, yeah.
And at the end of the thing, he's like, great. And from that moment on, he never, ever once said one thing about my bass playing.
Oh, really?
Ever.
Even when you did some Guns songs? I remember when we played in Australia, I think you did. It's So Easy?
We did It's So Easy, and You're Crazy.
You're
I think we bring different singers
up.
But when we do those songs, as time progressed, I remember the first couple times we rehearsed them, I played bass, he played guitar. And I remember looking at him going, like, why are we doing this? I play guitar and you play bass.
Yeah.
So
you switch over.
I play guitar and would sing the Axl parts of those songs, and Duff would play bass because it just made sense.
Yes.
And there's just nothing like his pocket. Even when I grew up playing those songs, I learned them. When Appetite came out, it was a huge part of my existence. But why would you ever do that if you're in the band? You know what I mean? It makes no sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a...
You guys did a lot of great tours together, man. I mean, that's one thing about Loaded. I think a lot of it is probably a lot of doors open, much like Hell Yeah, because, okay, Vinny's in the band, so we'll sure. check it out. Duff's in it. It's Duff's band. But then the band is actually really good. The songs are great. You guys are great.
Yeah.
You got a lot of big tours with Loaded.
Yeah, I mean, those doors, I mean, that's... I was blessed to be able to do that, you know. Definitely, you know, having Duff in the band opens that door.
Mm-hmm.
But you still have to stand on your
sure,
feet.
Sure, that just opens the door.
Yeah. So, so that was, you know, we were always really cognizant of that.
I remember one tour in particular. It was Alice Cooper, and he was going out with Ugly Kid Joe. This is just a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. and we got a call about we were up for the tour. And it came down to we didn't get it because it gave it to Loaded.
Yeah,
you guys got
right.
it. And we were that was Loaded. Ah,
that was a fun tour. That was a weird tour, though.
Mm-hmm.
It was that Alice. You know, he does this whole Halloween extravaganza through the UK every year. I guess mm-hmm. it's like I don't remember.
Yeah, it was around Halloween. Yeah,
and you know, Alice's crowd is kids from 8 years old to you know in their 60s.
Yeah,
and they like to sit down. It was one of those kind of tours where you really had to bust your ass to get people on their feet.
To get them into
I
it.
I mean, hard. You really had to, like, get the fuck up. You know?
Yeah.
And
it's weird, too, because I find, like, if you play in front of older bands, their fan base is pretty much locked in the stone as to what they like and don't like. And,
yeah.
and to accept new music is very hard. I mean, we did a lot of shows with Anthrax, and we always did good, but you can see a lot of people, like, these people will never buy a Fozzy record.
Yeah.
No matter how heavy or fast or crazy it is, they just have, this is my list of bands for life, and this is where I'm going to stay.
And I guess I kind of understand that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to think of a band I would go see that, but I understand that. It's just really frustrating.
Yeah, of course, stage. When you're on stage doing
but
it.
But that's why you do it.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just back down.
Right.
You get in their face. You know, I'll run out in the crowd and sit in some old lady's lap if I have to, you know? But it was what, you know, but that's funny that I didn't know you guys were up for that tour.
Yeah, we were. Even to the point where we talked about it, I knew the dates, everything. And then there's something I think that maybe, I'm sure Alice and Duff were friends
sure,
or maybe
sure.
the same booking age or whatever,
yeah.
and then we kind of just lost it. But we had hooked the fish for a bit, and
yeah.
then it just kind of
is it rock
away.
And roll funny?
It's, yeah, it's isn't
big,
it, man?
It's a big fishbowl.
You know, and then that's funny because, like we mentioned, we saw you guys in at Soundwave a couple of years ago. We played that one show in Melbourne, Fozzy and Loaded,
mm-hmm.
and that's how I think you and Rich, I think,
yeah.
hung out quite a bit
well,
around that time.
You know, that's what's so great about... Those, I mean, that's a unique festival tour because, you know, you've done all, you guys, Fozzy has done the European circuit and all
yeah.
that stuff. But Soundwave thing's a unique thing because all the bands travel together,
mm-hmm.
same shuttles, same hotels.
Right, same airplanes.
Because
there's no buses in Australia,
no.
all flights from city to
yeah.
city.
Yeah, and I would, I like to go to the gym in the morning and stuff like that. And every morning, the first couple days, I'd see Rich, and it was the third, fourth day, we're like, we're starting to give the nods, like, mm-hmm. good morning.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, then we start talking a little bit. And,
which is funny, because Rich is not a very sociable guy. He just looks at his... He shoegazes quite a bit.
Sure,
you know?
I get it. I mean, you know, I mean, touring's a unique thing, and you really find your way of existing.
Sure, exactly.
And I respect that, you know, anybody's space. But when you start in, like, that Soundwave thing, you have no choice but to see each other a lot. And then, you know, it's just those walls kind of break down. You're like, okay, you're
yeah.
cool. And... I remember I come over and watch you guys, and a couple times that we were playing, I remember like looking over and there's Rich standing right there. And
mm-hmm.
by the end of the tour, we're like, "Hey man, we should keep in touch." You know, if anything, and I remember telling him, "I'm like, if anything comes up or anything, give me a call."
Cause, really?
Like, I'm busy all the time.
Oh, that's cool.
That's how that kind of happened.
Oh no way! I
so,
didn't know that.
And I sent him. I think I remember sent him a couple messages on whatever on Facebook or something, or maybe it was, and it wasn't him. Somebody because Scott takes
yeah,
care
Scott
of that.
Yeah, Scott Dixon.
So,
yeah,
Scott's like, "Oh no, this isn't." But I'll send the message, and then I. And then just down the line, I think at one point I got a call from him. He's like, "Hey, would you be interested in doing this?" And things didn't work out. I remember what the situation was. But then a few weeks later, I got another call. I was like, "Hey, no, but really, like
with Fozzy?"
I'm like, "Yeah, I
yeah.
love you guys." And I'm like, "It was like again. It was like a Tuesday." He's like, "Can you be in Atlanta on Friday? You know the set? You know,
yeah.
Are we going to rehearse? No. We're gonna no. What are we doing? Oh, we're going to go play the Carolina Rebellion.
Yeah,
20,000 people."
Yeah. And that
I'm
was
like,
your first gig.
It was our first, never rehearsing.
Wow, that's right. I think maybe you guys were in the hotel room or something going over it, or did you
oh,
even do that?
Did we rehearse the day before for a second? a little bit, maybe. Yeah, it was just really, I remember
talking. It was a pretty big first gig.
I remember sitting on the bus before the gig and going up to Frank and like, oh, by the way, how do you count in these songs? Like, there's certain things
yeah,
as a
yeah,
band.
Yeah, of course.
It's like, right. Oh. He's like, no, don't worry, I'll give you four. And oh, thank God.
Well, I mean, you got thrown into the fire. And like I said, when we had the opening came up, you were the only guy. It's like, we got to get Rouse.
That's cool.
We got to get Rouse. And now, you know, it's funny. Everything works out for a reason. And you being in this band has made us a way better band. And I'm so happy that you came
Thanks.
And started
Thank
playing
you.
With us. And it's sometimes, you know, things happen for a reason. The reason that the other situation went down with our old bass players so we could get you
yeah.
and become a better band, better on stage.
Well, playing this music has made me a better bass player also. I mean, that's the great thing about music. And most people out there, I don't know if anybody's listening that wonders about music, you should always challenge yourself. Never get stuck in... I mean, this is different music than Loaded is.
Sure.
And other stuff that I write for myself or whatever it is.
Yeah, you got The Guessing Game, which
sure.
is a great band.
Sure.
You can check that out on iTunes.
But I guess my point is like, just because I hadn't played it... Like, I mean... You guys play mean riffs. Rich writes, and the drumming is—I mean, Frank's drumming is crazy good.
Rhythmically, and
yeah,
in the pocket,
it's big, and it's fast, and there's stuff. I mean, there's layers, and you know, especially not being able to rehearse with the band a bunch, it's challenging, and it's a little terrifying as a musician. You're like, you know, is this going to work for me?
Right.
Is this going to work for them? Am I going to work for them? And you don't know, and you know, it's just one of those
things.
But
you've locked it all in now. Singing wise too, you're a great singer too, which helps for us because we have so many harmonies and so many backing vocals and stuff too. So
there's that fine balance. It's a dance.
Yeah. When you mention the Fozzy songs are hard to play, what's the hardest Fozzy tune that we play in the set, and what's your favorite one to play?
It's a good question. Oh God, what is the hardest one? Well, there's still a part of Sin and Bones. There's a better debate, Rich writes these string skipping things, and
yeah,
it's very difficult on bass to do because it's just really hard.
Like Bad Tattoo, for example.
Exactly, he does it. There's a
down,
few
goes down.
Yes, that kind of the string skipping stuff. There's a three or four songs that you guys do that it's still, no matter what, every night I really have to focus on. Right now, Bad Tattoo
is
my favorite.
Is
my favorite song to play?
Yeah.
But like I said, those challenging songs have always been my favorite ones to play because when it gets to those moments, I know what's the one we're not playing in
tonight?
No, we're not. No, it's one we played.
Martyr No More, or
it's
Died With You.
It's one we played on the last tour. We're not playing it on the tour because it's tuned down really super low.
Oh, Shine Forever.
Yeah,
yeah.
That song is really difficult. This song is very difficult to play. Pauly is an amazing bass.
Oh yeah, he sure is. Yeah,
and
because you got to play his bass lines.
Yeah.
Right, because Rich doesn't write the bass lines.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, like most songs, each instrument, I mean, that's part of the song. I mean, you can take a little bit of liberty.
Right.
You can add your personality into it. But generally, I mean, you got to stick to it. And, Shine Forever, that's a motherfucker, that song. Because, also, Pauly, I don't play five-string basses.
And he did, yeah.
Pauly did. And so what I would do, I tune my lowest string down accordingly. But that makes the other strings, it makes some of these spacings and stuff really difficult. Anyway.
Okay.
So, some difficult stuff. But Bad Tattoo is definitely my favorite right now.
Well, it's great to dance with you, dude, man.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that you're in the band. And it's really great to have you.
Thanks, brother.
And especially when I have to put up with Frank all the time, you're a fun guy to hang out with, too.
Let's kill it tonight, baby.
Yeah.
All right, thanks to Jeff for giving us some great insight. Love the Nirvana story. Love the Lotus stories. And cool that Bad Tattoo is his favorite song by Fozzy. It's one of my favorites as well. So why don't we listen to it right now from the new Fozzy record by request from Mr. Jeff Rouse. This is Bad Tattoo right here on TIJ. Mistakes in my life.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Talk is Jericho.
Okay, we're hanging out here in Frankfurt, Germany. I got two of the hottest young upstarts in the WWE today, Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville. And it's funny to have you guys here because I've been watching you guys talk to each other, and it's making me laugh. Like, you're really funny. Yeah. It's like you guys have been friends your whole life. How long have you known each other for?
It certainly feels like that, Chris, but we've known us. Each other.
I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but yeah,
like
we've known
life
each other.
Partners.
Yeah.
How long have we known each other?
I think we met in 2006 in Europe.
Really? Yeah. That long ago?
Yeah. So what is that, 8 years?
Yeah. Yeah. Sami likes to accredit himself of breaking me into the business.
Well, that's only when when he'll sometimes make fun of me, I have to throw something back at him. And I'm not as good. Like, he's really good at making fun of people, and I'm not as good.
I can't believe that, though. I mean, you are more the nice guy.
Well,
I don't know, I'm not sure what that means about me. I don't think I'm necessarily.
I mean, he's just met us and he's observed it. So, I mean, I think you're onto something there.
I just got to, like, you know, you always meet, you know, the new guys and the young guys. And I know you guys have been around, which I always appreciate because I came in the business the same way of kind of traveling around the world.
Yeah.
And, but it's always fun to see new guys come in, and you're really comfortable here in the WWE, which is good. I mean, 10 years ago, it wouldn't have been as good.
Right. And you were saying that the other day, and I agree. And actually, it's funny because I read your book, and I mentioned this briefly to you the other day, but when I read your book and you're talking about just making these bad first impressions or, like, you know, maybe getting misunderstood.
Yeah.
I related to that a lot because I guess I didn't even realize it until a few years ago, but I've had a tendency to when I, you know, show up somewhere new in my career, like a new locker room, maybe sometimes
say the wrong thing.
You know, I feel comfortable. I do. And maybe too comfortable sometimes. And certainly that wouldn't have that wouldn't fly here. Look, 10 years ago.
Business,
you know?
Has changed.
Yeah,
you know? And
definitely.
Another thing is, too, is, like, you know so many of the guys up here now on the main roster. Maybe it's from being in NXT together, from being on the world together. So, like, I was thinking the other day, like, besides, for example, there's Kane, there's Goldust, and there's me from, like, Attitude Era, quote-unquote. And other than that, like, even on this tour, there's no real Cena or Orton or Kofi or those type of guys. It's mostly the Sammys and the Adrians and the Usos and Dean and Ambrose.
Yeah, I think the landscape is really changing, and a lot of the guys who are on the main roster now, we've met over the years, you know, all across the world, from Japan to the Indies in America to Europe. So it's kind of really cool for us. It's certainly made kind of arriving here a lot easier.
Right.
And settling in. I think that's partly why we feel so comfortable here.
Right, because you know everybody, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So who did you work with kind of in these other territories and other countries that's on the roster now?
Seth, Dean.
Mm-hmm. Luke Harper was around. I met him probably around the same time, 2006.
Mm-hmm.
Cesaro, obviously.
Yeah, Daniel Bryan, Cesaro, right. There's a lot of guys. I don't know.
Were you guys together, like, was it Ring of Honor that you were in, or was it?
I was in Ring of Honor for a while. Yeah. He was.
We'd kind of touch bases. Like, I was very much based in Japan for a long time with a group called Dragon Gate. And I actually spent pretty much 5 years full-time out there because that was very, like, that was what I wanted to do. That was an aspiration of mine. I always grew up, you know, loving that style.
Okay.
I made that choice, but we'd always kind of touch bases. We do a Pro Wrestling Grill out in California a bunch. I did a few Ring of Honor shots in Europe a lot. We kind of see each other.
I mean, you know how it is, the same way, like, you just bump into people along, you know what I mean, along the road.
You go with this guy, and then you go over here with that guy.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned you worked a lot in Japan, and that was your goal when you were growing up. So I was the same when I first started. I always wanted, that's why I started with the name Lionheart, because I wanted the name of an animal, because all my favorite guys in New Japan had animal names.
Yeah.
You know, like Black Tiger and Wild Pegasus and Liger and Ultimo Dragon, you know, Flying Scorpio. Who was it that you were watching that you wanted to go to Japan?
Well, I remember, I've been a wrestling fan from a young age, but it wasn't until I was about, I think, maybe 12 or 13, one of my buddies gave me a tape of, you know, the first J Cup in 94.
Right.
Classic, and I remember I knew nothing about kind of wrestling outside of WWE back then. Mm-hmm. So it completely blew my mind. And I saw guys, you know, like Pegasus, like like Sasuke, Liger. Mm-hmm. And the way they were kind of wrestling, it just kind of appealed to me. And ever since then, it's kind of been my main interest as far as in the whole business has been that style, that junior style.
Sure, right.
Like, yourself included, you know, kind of popularized during the mid-90s. And
Hard-hitting, but some acrobatic elements to it as well.
And, the technique. It's all about technique, you know. Mm-hmm. Not only the high-flying, but on the mat. And it just, it looked very real to me. Mm-hmm. And it was very cool. And ever since seeing that first J-Cup, I've kind of been hooked.
Now, did you work in Japan?
I did. We worked together in Japan, Dragon Gate, for a few years. But I also worked for another company out there that called DDT, mm-hmm. and they're a little more off the wall. And actually, I felt that was a bit later in my career, shortly before I signed here. And I loved working there so much.
In DDT?
Yeah, because the thing about that is I felt it really tested me as a professional, mm-hmm. in the sense of, like, one night, you know, you might be wrestling a blow-up doll, and then the next night you might be doing, like, a main event at Corican Hall, and then the next night, you know, I'm wrestling the boss in, like, this false count anywhere match. And you know, one time I wrestled in literally a campsite, no ring, just throughout the campsite. Yeah, and it was raining that day, so it was just mud everywhere. And
a holiday campsite or something?
No, DDT's famous for these camp shows. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. It's great. It's so I just felt or I'd wrestle like Danshiku Dino, who he does like a very over the top gay gimmick. So like, you're next thing you know, you're like dancing and you're doing like a dance number in the middle of the ring. Like, it just tested all these aspects of your your range. Uh-huh. So I really appreciated that. But
did you really work a blow up doll?
I only maybe worked a spot with the blow up doll, but
yeah, I only worked a spot. Please explain. What are you talking about?
What did I even do with the doll?
Well, first of all, why is there a match with a blow up
doll? The blow up doll was the champion at one point. Yeah.
That's a thing out there. You need to check out the match Kenny Omega had with the doll.
And Ibushi as well.
Yeah, those were like genuinely very good matches.
Ibushi, and this is where I credit him to being an unbelievable wrestler. I watched this match, and he structured it in the sense of like this 5-star masterpiece, like epic battle. And by the end of, it's about 25 minutes long, so he went 25 minutes with a doll. Think about that.
Oh my god!
By itself.
Yep.
But the thing that I think is unbelievable is by the end of the match, you forget it's a doll. You're actually like engrossed in the big near falls and stuff. It's amazing.
It's the old standard, like, oh, so and so
can wrestle Bruce
the broomstick. You can have a match with a blow up doll.
Yoshihiko was her name.
Oh, she actually had a name. So she was the champion for a while.
I think it was
the doll was the champion.
It beat. I'm pretty sure it went over on Ibushi in that match.
What kind of crowds are they drawing for this?
They do okay. They're like a smaller indie with a cult following, but they do okay. Like their big show once a year is in Budokan. Or Sumo Hall or whatever. So
That's not bad.
I got to wrestle Budokan, which is cool for me as a music fan.
Yeah, Cheap Trick.
Yeah, Cheap Trick, live at Budokan. Bob Dylan. Like,
Ozzy.
I actually saw Bryan Adams out there.
Really?
Yeah, just happenstance. I was out there. And,
nice word.
Yeah, right. Bryan Adams happened to be playing, so we went to see him at Budokan. Yeah, it was pretty good. He's great. I think we were talking about it the other day, like Tom Petty, the sense
You
know how... You don't even realize it, but you'd know like 30
how
of his
many
songs
he has.
Bryan Adams the same way. I was like, oh man, he's just churning him out.
He's like the Canadian Springsteen or Tom Petty.
Kinda.
He's got so many tunes, just a normal guy.
Yeah,
I always used to love that. Like, I spent a lot of time in Japan too, and if I ever had a couple nights off, see who's in town and then go watch them. And watching concerts in Japan is the same as having matches there.
Yeah,
people don't do anything. They just kind of sit there quietly. Song ends, there'll be a polite applause, and then they just kind of sit there while the band talks to them. Like, like,
I was really singing along. I don't know what it was. Maybe like, you know, somebody. I need somebody. And then I look around and I realize no one's singing. So
don't
I'm like,
sing.
Yeah, I just felt, you know, felt like
this
I was
is not for right.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I felt like I was being a burden to those around me, so I stopped.
No, you mentioned Kenny Omega. I saw him have a match against a little kid.
Awesome.
Was that in DDT also?
Actually, I think that was for a company called Ice Ribbon. He's just
Ice Ribbon.
Yeah, that's a women's company, and it's small as well, but he's a really cool guy, and he just debuted with New Japan and the Bullet Club. So
It's weird because he's from Winnipeg.
Yeah.
And I've never met him. Like, you know, I'm from Winnipeg too.
Right.
Such a small town.
Yeah.
Like, not that, but the fact he came from there, I've never crossed paths.
Yeah, well, hopefully
it's a great match, though, if you can YouTube it. of him working. I think she was a 9-year-old girl or something.
Yep.
Or,
yeah.
Like, I don't even know how that came about, but it was really good.
Unbelievable.
Was she the owner's daughter or something like that?
No, I think she was just some kid. I think they were going to train her to be a wrestler.
All right.
But man, what a pro, because that match is just and it's got well over a million views.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
It's really good.
Like, it made headlines in newspapers.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's funny caused too, like, controversy. I think he chops her or something or pushes her down. It's like, boo.
Yeah, it's so great.
You know? So how long have you guys been kind of flirting with the roster, the main roster up here?
I want to say maybe 6 months or so. You never quite know. Mm-hmm. When they're going to pull the trigger, so to speak, so you always kind of stay ready.
Mm. It's been a lot more intense, I'd say, the last 3 or 4 months, but I mean, they first brought me up to do a loop a little over a year ago, and it's cool because the very first WWE show I'd ever done was actually in Montreal, which is my hometown.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I wrestled cool. Cesaro, who's obviously one of my best opponents.
Uh-huh.
It was like the first time my mom and my dad saw me, so it was like pretty cool,
like
you
in
know?
The Bell Center or whatever.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Like, I never brought them out to, like, the Chevalier Colombe in Valleyfield or whatever where I was starting, you know what I mean? So it was cool for them to finally see me wrestle on a pretty big stage. But so that was September of, 12 or 13.
Uh-huh.
So, and then did a couple of loops, it's weird because I haven't done a whole lot of domestic stuff, like, in the States. But I've been on all kinds of tours overseas. It's very bizarre. Yeah.
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 And you just had a hometown show the other day in Newcastle.
I did, yeah.
Was your family there to see you?
Yep, yep. I had 20 tickets. My family's, you know, my mom, my dad, my aunties, my uncles, my cousins. It was unbelievable.
That's the first time they got to see you in the
big leagues. It was actually the second time. I did Newcastle for the first time back in May this year.
Okay.
So this has been my second European tour and my second time home. So obviously the first time is, it's very, very surreal. But this week has been incredible as well. It's been just a great experience. And it's always, you know, that's the arena that I grew up watching wrestling.
Did you used to go to shows there?
Yep, yep. Yeah. I remember going to WCW show back at that arena.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was definitely had a place in my heart. And then to be able to perform there, it's been
And then you got to go do a bunch of media too. I remember you were telling me you went to your football home football.
Yep,
club.
Yep. That was that was crazy.
What's the team? Newcastle?
I'm a big so I'm from Newcastle, so I'm a Geordie. So obviously I'm a big Newcastle United Football Club fan. So we actually went to the stadium. We didn't expect to get inside, but it turns out they were aware of who I was, so they let us in. They gave us the full VIP tour. They gave me a personalized shirt and everything.
That's great.
And they actually interviewed me for the match day program, which is, you know, a huge deal. So it's been really quite a surreal week, and it's always unbelievable to come home because I don't get to see my family too often,
right,
with the schedule we have. So not only was it great to see them, but to be able to perform in that arena in front of you know, the hometown.
How long have you been living in the States for?
I moved to Tampa initially in October 2012, so it's a little bit over 2 years now. I was in Tampa for about a year, and then we moved down the road to Orlando for the performance center, and I've been living there ever since.
And you started out, your name was Pac, right?
Yep.
What does that mean?
That's a funny story. That's it's kind of a stupid nickname I got from my dad, because we always, you know, you play a fight with your dad, and I feel a little bit embarrassed in this, but as a kid, I always used to have like a six pack.
Even as a little kid?
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know what it is, genetics.
I had them too. It's just skinny kid abs. It's not, you weren't in shape.
Yeah, I'm not boasting. I'm not boasting. I'm just telling you how it was.
I had them too.
So whenever I was player fighting with my dad, he'd always, you know, poke funny, be like, come on, six pack, show me a six pack. So it kind of became this silly nickname. And then when I started training, they asked me for an indie name, and I didn't really have any ideas, and I brainstormed and I couldn't really think of anything. So originally I was going to go with Six Pack, but obviously, you know,
that one's been taken.
Exactly. Yeah. So we ended up shortening it to Pack, and it was always only meant to be kind of a temporary thing, but then it's one of those names that kind of, it just stuck.
Yeah.
And I was known for Pack for...
Yeah, you were just Pac, no last name or no first name, like Bono.
No.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, exactly.
Pac.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if it was Pac or Pac. I didn't know how to pronounce it.
I thought it was that Liam? I don't know.
It's a conversation piece right there. They're like, is it Pac or is it Pac?
I feel it
gets you talking.
Yeah.
It sounds weird at first, but then it kind of grows.
Sure, this is just your name.
Yeah, right? It grew on me, definitely.
How did you,
Pac in Japan.
Yeah. How did you decide on Adrian Neville?
Well, that's a funny story. You know, the office asks you to come up with a bunch of names. And
is that how it works? They ask you?
Yeah. They do. So I give a lot of suggestions. And I never actually pitched Adrian, but I definitely pitched Neville because I was just looking through, kind of, you know, like everything I was interested in. And my favorite band is a punk ska group out of England called The Specials. Mm-hmm. And they have a toaster in that band called Neville Staples. Mm. And I've always kind of, I thought Neville was kind of different. It was kind of British. So I pitched Neville as a name. And then when I got the final list, they gave me three choices. And Adrian Neville was one of those three. And the three I got were terrible. And Adrian was like, at first I wasn't too keen on it. But compared to the others, I remember one of them was Ripley Bishop. Can you imagine me being Ripley Bishop? I mean, I got a lot of slack for Adrian Neville.
It's actually funny. I think in your book, one of them, I think it's the first one where you talk about the office gave you this list of names for the Lion Tamer.
Yes, for my finishing
movie. Right. And it's so funny because now we have kind of similar stories, but with the list of names. Like a friend of mine, Kevin Steen, just signed and he was texting me like the list of names they gave him. And there's some like I was belly laughing reading it.
So they're literally Ripley Bishop. Horrific. I don't know.
Yeah. Like people actually get paid to think of these names.
That's crazy.
It's like a soap opera name. They're just terrible.
Yeah. So Adrian Neville was kind of the best of a bad bunch, so
better
to speak.
Than but Ripley Bishop.
Absolutely. But it's kind of grown on me.
You look like a Ripley.
Thanks for that, man.
And then how did you end up with Sami Zayn? Because you were El Generico, right?
Well, people seem to think that. I don't know. There are a lot of parallels.
Oh, okay,
but,
right. So but the rumor was
that, yeah, I mean, we do have very similar builds and had an apparently very similar career path. But
gotcha. You can't confirm or deny.
Yeah,
that.
Exactly.
But you were working around these other territories around the same time.
Yeah, it's weird that we never directly crossed paths. But anywho, it was definitely once I got there, I did have to.
You just said anywho, by the way. It was awesome, by the way. You have the best. We were using the other day. Willy Nilly was one of them.
What do you mean? Is anywho not a common expression?
He's got endless expressions.
Really, not if you're like under 60 years old and a guy. Anywho, sounds like my Auntie Joan.
Yeah, Sammy is very old for his age. I don't know if you noticed, but he's very old for his age.
He's talking about the nuts and bolts of the situation is. He'll go all willy-nilly on me here.
Not to mention his dress sense. He dresses like an old man as well, which has been commented on several times.
That actually goes back years and years, even like as a teenager.
Oh, you actually do dress like an old man?
I don't realize that.
100%. Right. Like my grandfather.
Like, what do you mean? Like, give me some examples.
You know, like old slacks. You got this old cap. This what is it? Like a miner's cap or something?
It looks like Brian Johnson's hat from AC/DC.
Oh yeah.
Which TJ stole? Tyson Kidd stole your hat.
Yeah.
Yep.
But you didn't know that.
No, they played a good little rib on me.
So tell us about the rib that just happened the other day.
So I wear this hat. I bought this hat and only a couple of years ago, but I think. People have thought that I've had it my whole life. I don't know what it is about the hat. Like,
it's handed down for generations.
It looks like, as he said, it looks like an old man hat. And, you know, I've been wearing it all the time in pre-tapes or backstage stuff. And so people just associate with me with this hat. And so I put it down the other day. We're eating at the hotel after the show. And, you know, like, maybe I am a little old-fashioned. When I sit down, I take, to eat, I take off my coat, I take off my hat.
You can't wear your hat at the table.
Yeah, right. You know?
Bloody.
So I put down the hat, and I don't know. So Cody Cody Rhodes tries on the hat. I go, wow, you know, you look real good in that hat. I took a picture. I'm like, look at that, you know. And he puts it down. And then I go, I don't know, to get some bread and butter or something. I don't know what. And then I come back, the hat's gone. I go, huh, where's the hat? And I look around. I do misplace things a lot, so I put it on myself at first. I'm like, no, wait, it was definitely on the table. You know, and so, okay, all right, I'm getting ribbed. Okay, right. One of the boys grabbed it. It'll show up, no big deal. And then the next day, I guess, you know, word had spread that my hat was missing because I'd asked a few people, hey, did you grab the hat? You grabbed the hat, and it turned into a whole thing where, because, you know, Sin Cara is actually a big practical joker. So, of course, I asked him, and then the rib, you know, exploded, and I was being accused of being a racist because he was Mexican. Oh, of course you would accuse him. But no, it's because he's a joker, not because he's Mexican.
It's got nothing to do with the race. Yeah.
So, anywho, it turned into this whole thing, and then finally, I'm in the ring. We're doing a three-way match. Which again, it happened. I almost called it a threesome. I don't know why I keep doing this every time. I'm about to say about three way. We had a threesome match, a three way match,
a threesome match
with Neville and myself and Kid. And so I entered the ring first, and I'm sitting there, and I'm watching, Tyson do his entrance, and then he comes out with his hood. And it's funny because sometimes when other people are doing their entrance, I'm kind of like doing whatever with myself, but. This time I was really intent on his entrance because he wears these Beats headphones in his entrance. And as he was on the top rope before he does the reveal of the hood, I remember thinking, hey, does he wear those Beats on the live events or just on TV? So I'm really curious to see if he's wearing these headphones. I'm really watching his entrance intently. And then he rips off the hood, and there's my hat on his head. And I flipped. Apparently everyone was watching.
Everyone was watching
at the curtain.
Everyone came downstairs from the dressing room to watch you on the monitor to see what your action was.
And I think my legitimate reaction was the
amazing.
Payoff. Yeah,
it was
which
amazing.
Is,
yeah, you
which
fired
is,
up.
And I'm
yeah, it
pointing
was like,
my
it was
finger
like a
at
clock, like, hey, you got my hat. You weren't working it. It was real. He's got my hat. You even went to the ref. He's got my hat.
Yeah.
And the best is, like, if you're a fan, like, you don't know what's going
no
on. Like, why is this guy angry at this guy with a hat?
And
like,
why is he wearing this old man hat to the ring? That's Tyson
Kidd. The fans love the hat, though.
Maybe they do?
I don't know if they knew the history of the hat, but they definitely got behind it.
Well, why wouldn't they know the history of the hat? Everyone's talking about Zayn's hat. Duh.
Well, I think it's just a very, you know, you look at that hat and you like whoever's wearing that hat. It's very...
it's just a friendly hat.
It's a polite hat.
It's a polite, friendly hat.
Exactly.
Yeah, no one hates old men, so...
Absolutely. And there you go, too. What a great merch item.
Actually, no
hat.
Joke, I think they were talking about doing it. About doing the hat. I'm not kidding. Which is funny because I don't come to the ring with it. It's only like a backstage thing or when I show up.
Maybe you'll start a new fashion movement. Everyone will start dressing like grandfather.
It becomes the lowest selling merch item of all time, only beat by the Moppy shirt and the Steve Blackman shirt. Jesus.
Well, I don't know. Let's give it a chance. Let's just give it a chance.
So, how did you get the name Sami Zayn?
Oh yeah, right. it was something similar to Neville. Wherein actually, it's kind of funny because I put a bunch of names down. And I didn't know what I was going to be because I had kind of wrestled under a different name earlier. Mm. And then I didn't know, you know, what I was going to be or, you know, because I'm actually Arabic, but I'm also a redhead.
A French-Canadian redheaded Arabic.
And I look Irish, so I don't know what avenue are we going to, you know.
What demographic are you appealing
exactly.
to here?
Exactly. So I separated all these categories of names. Like, okay, if they want me to be an Arab, I'll be this. And if they want me to be, like, you know, a Mexican or an Irishman or a French-Canadian or whatever. So I separated into all these categories. And then... they rejected a lot of everything. And
so
then,
who was they? Like, who do you have to give it to?
I think at the time it was a guy called Matt Martellaro, who's not with the company anymore.
Is he like the head writer? Or he was
no,
like,
he's sort of the liaison.
In charge of creative for NXT.
Yeah, okay. He was the liaison between developmental and the head office, I believe.
Yeah.
We're not really sure 100% what he did, but I think it was something like that. So, and essentially, I put a list of names. They all got rejected. Another list of names. They all got rejected. But something about Sami Zayn, like, what I like about it, it's actually an Arabic name. And, like, an Arab will be...
Sami or Zayn?
Sami, both.
Oh, okay.
I was almost legitimately named Sami by my mom, so...
What is your name?
My real name?
Yeah.
It's Rami.
Rami?
Yeah.
Because I hear Wyatt calls you Rami. It's like R-A-M-Y?
I.
Rami. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
So Sami, Rami, it's one letter, you know, one letter off. And... So finally, you know, I've submitted all these names. I'm running out of ideas, but I liked Sami Zayn because it was Arabic, but it's like undercover Arab. Like, it's not going to terrify Americans.
Yeah, yeah. It's not
versus
like
Muhammad Abdulaziz or something. And like, they don't want to cheer this guy. And then I come out. It's like a disconnect, you know, like they're expecting something insane. And then this white redheaded guy comes out. And so, you know, I needed something kind of neutral, like kind of Arab, like undercover Arab sort of thing. So Sami Zayn's an Arab name.
What's that?
Undercover Aaron is funny.
Well, like, you know, yeah, kind of, you know what I
totally,
mean.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah.
It's very, like you said, if you have that name, you're instantly a heel.
Right.
Like,
or
you agreed a little too quickly with that one. Yeah.
Well, I'm just, you know, the climate and all that.
Yeah, the, you know, just, you know, being conscious of it. So, but Sami Zayn really stuck out to me. So finally, I remember I saw Dusty Rhodes, who's also sort of the head of creative down there. And I was like, yeah, Dream, I don't know about these names. And he's like, well, which one do you like? And I look on the list. I'm like, I kind of like this one, Sami Zayn. He goes, Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn. Mm, I like that. You tell them Dream said Sami Zayn. That's the name. And that was it. And it was. And it was. His. It, you know, when Dream says it, it happens. So that's how it happened. Dream kind of heard it. Mulled it over, gave the okay, and that was it. I became Sami Zayn.
I wish my nickname was Dream. Yeah. I wish people called me Dream. Cool, like Dream says, Sami Zayn's the name. Was what was do you remember any of the other names that were on there? Somehow, I have a feeling that you remember all of the names that you came up with. But do you have one?
I don't. But if I actually had my Canadian cell phone, which I don't have on me, I had the list on there. Okay. I think Hadar.
Hadar was one.
Was one.
Hadar.
Correct.
That's not as much of an undercover Arab name. That's more of a in your face.
Is it?
I think Hadar.
Hadar, yeah.
Even a name?
Well, I don't know.
Actually,
that could also be like a Viking too. Hadar, the horrible.
Exactly. That's
Hadar. It was funny because I had Sami Hadar on there, and
that one's almost taken too. Yeah, right. I can't drive 55, baby.
Exactly. Right. So that one couldn't pass.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
You're listening to Talk is Jericho.
Sitting here with Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville. You can see them on WWE Network December 11th at the TakeOver R Evolution live event presented by NXT. Things have been going really well for you guys at NXT, but the first time I ever saw you was when you had the four-way match. It was you two guys and Tyson and Tyler Breeze.
Right,
yep.
And was that the first main event pay-per-view? Because I guess it was technically a pay-per-view, right? Or a special?
Yeah.
No, that was actually the third one we did.
Okay.
The first one was NXT Arrival, which was back, what was that, February?
February.
Back in February.
Right when the network first launched.
And was that, who worked in that main event? You guys?
It was actually myself and Bo Dallas. We had a ladder match.
Okay.
I wrestled Cesaro on that one.
Okay, yeah, and that was critically acclaimed as well, both those matches. But I specifically remember hearing about the Sami Zayn-Cesaro match.
Yeah, it was a good one. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, it was
and he wrestled Bo and won the championship.
You're now
there.
The NXT champion right now.
Yep, I am. Right. Yes, ever since that arrival was when I won.
So that was the first special.
First special.
And then what was the second one?
Second one was called Takeover. I wrestled Tyson.
Okay.
Oh right,
Tyson Kidd. And
I wrestled Tyler Breeze. It was a number one contenders match that I lost.
Oh my goodness!
So I have a good track record of losing at every single special, which has kind of actually led into this special where we're coming up
December 11th,
right, where we're wrestling each other for the championship.
Yeah.
Right.
And
what's that one called?
Our Evolution.
Our.
It's NXT Takeover. Like they're all takeovers. The way like In Your House, you know. Right. But it's R as in...
Letter R,
yeah.
Bracket, Evolution.
Evolution.
So it's like Revolution or R Evolution?
I get it.
Okay,
It's very clever.
It took me a minute, so...
And so you guys are in the main event, working for the NXT title one-on-one at the NXT TakeOver, R Evolution.
Yes, yes.
I mean, how is it for you guys? I mean, I know when you're working in the indies and working in Japan and all over the world, you're probably working like, you know, it's the big leagues. And then you sign with the WWE.
Yep.
And then it's not like a demotion, but you're starting out in the, I guess a minor league or whatever it is.
It's a reset button for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was that for you guys? Did you know you were going to be getting signed to NXT, or were you thinking you could go right to the main roster?
We knew. When I signed, NXT was kind of really starting out, and especially the new kind of rebooted NXT from Full Sail University in Orlando, and we knew the TV show, and it was a challenge that I was looking forward to. Obviously, I knew that I'd have to adapt to how things work here. You know, it's very different, especially to what I was used to in Japan, and the company that I was specifically Dragon Gate, the company that I worked for out there, they had a very specific style, which is kind of a mix of like Japanese and Mexican wrestling. So I knew, you know, it'd take some time to kind of acclimatize here. Mm-hmm. So I was very much prepared for it and excited for the challenge, you know.
Mm-hmm. And you?
Yeah, I knew, obviously, like the way it is now. And it's funny because I actually use you guys and your generation, like, you know, the Benoit, Malenko, Jericho, all those guys. Like, it's so funny because even though if you come in today with a background like myself or like Neville,
right,
it doesn't mean anything anymore. Like, you still have to hit that reset button. Whereas before with WCW, you'd already kind of honed your craft around the world and you'd sort of made a name for yourself somewhere. And so when you came in, like, you'd go straight to TV, but those days are just simply gone.
Well, there was no real kind of anywhere else to go. WWE was just WWE. There was no farm system or, you know, developmental system.
They had developmental, I think, as early as 96, because I think Mark Henry and The Rock apparently were the first two to ever...
Like in Memphis or something.
Yeah,
like that,
yeah. Right? They had real small time, but they weren't taking developed wrestlers redeveloping them.
Right. They were working in like Lawler's territory on Vince's dime.
Right. Or like OVW later on and everything else. But that was really about taking guys with, like, it was a farm system, as in we're creating our own stars from the ground up, not taking guys who are already established. So it is funny because we're like, you know, I'm almost on my 13th year here, and it's like I'm a 13-year rookie.
Wow.
You know what I mean? It's really funny. Yeah.
And how long have you been working for?
I've been working 10
yeah,
years.
So like you said, you guys got, you know, a blue chip of experience, but you're still the rookies.
Yeah,
the
it's
kids,
really,
you know?
It's funny sometimes. Yeah. But, which might go back to that comfort thing, because, like, sometimes, you know, you're supposed to, or I'm supposed to, I feel like, act like an, I can't speak for other people, but, like, sort of act like the new guy and the green boy and stuff, but... Same time, like, I also feel like, yeah, I don't feel that way.
Right, you're not.
Yeah, because I'm kind of not.
And you can tell, yeah, that and then that's where the comfort really comes from, because you have confidence in who you are, because you've been doing this for a long time.
Maybe.
You know how to maneuver yourself through a locker room, whereas a guy who's just starting might just kind of sit there a little bit more timidly.
Right, and I think they actually want you to sort of act that way, but it's kind of just, I don't know.
Absolutely.
Inherently not in me because of my personality, but also because... You know, it's just not my first day.
Yeah, 13 years experience.
Right.
I mean, that's a lot of experience.
I would
think
so.
That's more than John Cena has, probably. You've probably been working longer than he has, I think. I think he started.
Maybe. I'm just not even going to touch that one, though. But maybe. I don't know.
I'm just saying, for example, I think he started in 2002.
Yeah, I broke
from what it. I remember, so that would be 12
debuted,
years.
Yeah, me too. I debuted in early 2002
you
as
know,
well.
John,
so.
Randy, you know, all the guys started about 2002. Right. So you've got that level of experience. You just haven't been here,
right?
But you've been around.
But that is the funny thing about WWE is, like, it kind of doesn't matter what you did before
for anybody.
Yeah,
even for me.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know
that. Steve Austin, Mick Foley. It doesn't matter what you do outside of these walls.
Yeah.
Until you walk through Vince's curtain for the first time through that gorilla, that's when your career really starts here.
Yeah.
He might know your name or know of you or know something about your reputation, but you have to prove yourself here, man, because to Vince, he doesn't know who you guys are. He doesn't watch tapes. He doesn't,
of course,
he doesn't tape
He's
trade.
Not tape trading.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
well, that's a dated reference now. They won't even
DVDs.
Yeah.
YouTube trading. Yeah. I don't know. Link trading.
Yeah. Well, WWE is not really considered a wrestling product, is it? It's sports entertainment.
Right.
It's
exactly.
It's a whole different market. A whole different demographic. So, you know, you kind of, it is, the two worlds are similar, but they're, at the same time, they're completely different.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's a whole new thing. And so tell us a little bit about the Performance Center. I mean, it's an amazing place.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you guys are pretty, not you guys per se, because you've been around, but the new guys coming in there for the first time, they're very fortunate to be in training
God,
this atmosphere.
Yeah.
Tell us about what happens down there.
It's you know, a world-class facility from having seven rings to roll about in to...
It's got everything.
Yeah,
like
the gym,
a lounge.
The medical room,
it's crazy.
State of
it's
the
crazy.
Art. Yeah, it's awesome.
And, so, like, I don't want to compare it to, like, oh, when I got trained in my day, but, like...
Well, I didn't even
I didn't even have a ring. Trained on, like, the grass was, like, frozen. It was November in Canada. Like, taking bumps on the grass in a park. That's
Which
where
is
I learned.
Perfect for when you did your campfire matches.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh, I got this.
This is easy, man. I know this. So you trained
in a
grass?
In a backyard. Literally in a backyard.
Wow.
Yeah. I won't bore you with the whole story. It's kind of interesting, but it's kind of long as well. But essentially, I just paid some local guy, you know, and I wasn't really aware of his qualifications. I just wanted to break in really bad. So paid
you didn't just get fleeced off some random bum, did you?
mean,
you don't need a ring, kid.
I mean, he worked. This guy worked at the FLQ in the church basement every Friday, so he had to be good. So this is the guy that trained me, and you know, we just basically a class. It was three guys, me and two other guys. The other two never even finished training or never became wrestlers, but. Yeah, just bumping on the grass. And then his whole thing is like, because if you bump on the grass, once you get in a ring, it'll be easy. Oh. Which is true, but you failed to mention that you just don't have like access to the ring.
Yeah. This sounds very dodgy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I paid $25 a week, so it's not like he like robbed me blind or anything, but certainly I became a pretty good bumper as a result, I would say.
So kids nowadays with this performance out of these seven
today,
rings,
seven
you
rings.
Don't even know.
Spoiled brats. Yeah, and you're getting – here's the huge thing is you're getting paid. Like they're scouting talent from whatever, you know, football or whatever, you know, and they're scouting you and they're paying you to come –
Once you go to the center, you have to be a contracted performer, right? To
be in
the
performance. Yes.
So you're getting paid, like you said.
You're getting paid to come train – to be a WWE superstar. It's crazy. It's crazy.
No, you said that there's the thing that I laughed at. You said there's seven rings. There's a lounge. There's a gym. Lounge was second on your list. Like, this must be a pretty nice lounge.
Well, there's just the TV with like – and the network is a new thing as well. And that's got access to pretty much like everything ever.
Yeah.
So you've just got like everything's at your fingertips. Like so you have a
clubhouse. You can go in there and watch matches and stuff.
Yeah, there's a kitchen.
Yep.
You know, there's a kitchen with a counter and then the TV and a couch and – just, man, it's like, not to mention the rings and the medical and the gym. Like, it's just a great gym. It's
And there's
awesome.
Also, like, kind of a television. I don't know if it's a studio, but you could do promos there that they film.
We got a promo room. We got a commentary booth. We got everything you could.
Yeah.
Any facet of pro wrestling, sports, entertainment you can consider that it's caters for.
And the cool part about it is it's becoming slowly but surely like the center for everything WWE. Like they convert it, like, my god, like the tech guys that we have don't get enough weight, like not
of
enough
course,
credit
yeah.
at
yeah,
all
yeah.
They turn that place into a media hub when we need to do media days or whatever, like when they were launching 2K15 the video game, you know, they converted it and it was press from all over the world. Like that is where they go, the performance, and like we're having a media day, you know what I mean. So it doubles as their headquarters in a weird way. But it's just, it's amazing. It's an amazing place, but...
I think it's a huge asset to the company.
Sure.
more than anything.
Even outside of just being a training center.
Yeah.
It's you know, really good for the image.
I think that they're actually even training from what Triple H told me last time I was there before the real performance center, was that they're even training, like, the cameraman, the lighting guys, the producers. Like, they're training, like you said, every aspect, not just in the ring, but outside the ring as well.
It's just down the road from Full Sail University, which is where we shoot NXT television. That's like a multimedia university. Where,
right.
So I know they work a lot with Full Sail, a lot with students. It's students who actually who are the cameramen for NXT TV.
Wow. Okay.
Some of them, yeah, some of them.
Or they're going to school to learn how to do this and getting on-the-job training sort of thing, right?
Exactly. So I know that working relationship with Full Sail is you know, very important. That's one of the reasons they moved to that spot in Orlando, because everyone had to move from Tampa.
Now, it's a great atmosphere there, too, when you work there. I mean, I think it holds maybe 400 people or so, but those people are so into all you guys. It really does kind of remind me of working in the ECW arena or something like that, where it's a small crowd, but they know everybody and they're playing along with it. It's a lot of fun to work there.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's sort of like I think that's where having an indie background or whatever actually kind of comes in handy, because one thing about the Performance Center is like they're very much gearing you to learn to work like a television, WWE's like television sort of style, but
yeah.
You know, the audience, I'm a huge believer and a huge proponent of how important the audience is to it's everything. Like,
sure,
the audience is the
it
show.
It can make or break your match.
Absolutely. And the thing I always say is if you think about all the best matches you've ever not only had but watched and you loved, it's the crowd is like probably the majority
Hogan
of the reason.
Hogan versus Rock.
Perfect example.
Turn the sound down on that. It's
perfect example.
Turn the sound up. It's the best match of all
time. Exactly.
You know,
so the crowd is the match. So sometimes I feel like the crowd I don't know, as style has kind of evolved, the crowd is sort of getting left in the dust a little bit, and that's one thing where Full Sail, you know, it's kind of got that indie sort of like the crowd is such a part of the show that I love that. I love that interaction. That's, to me, what makes wrestling beautiful, you know what I mean? That interact. It's show business, sure, like you said the other day, you know?
Yeah, it's all about connecting with the crowd and when they're playing along, you know.
And you know, at Full Sail, most TV tapings were taping 4 hours, 4 weeks of TV in one night. So by the time the last hour rolls around, they've seen,
they've seen a lot
of product. So
your music's played six times in, like, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Please. Please.
God.
So, can we get Hadar out here, please? But I mean, and this is only the specials, the takeovers are only available on the network.
That's right.
But do you find, and we kind of talked about this the other day, do a lot of people when you're working a show in, you know, Poughkeepsie, New York, do they know who you guys are? Can you tell a lot of people are watching the shows?
Definitely more so now since the launch of the network. Mm-hmm. Prior to the network, you know, I did a few loops, and they'd kind of know who you are, but they weren't really sure. But now since the network's launched and it's I think NXT in general is getting, you know, more notoriety and it's getting getting quite popular. And I think recently we've got some really good reactions on some of the live events in some small towns where you wouldn't expect it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we're sort of becoming like we have a cult following within the WWE. It's like, these are the next guys. We're like, what's going on over there? Sort of like, I don't want to compare it to ECW, but it is sort of like the, wait, who's that in the corner? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's us, because I think they are hearing that we're doing some good stuff down there and working real hard and just, you know, and the product is so different in NXT versus what they're going to see on Raw or SmackDown. So, you know, and a lot of us also, for like the really smart audience and the educated ones, they know a lot of the guys who are there, like myself and him from before.
From your other days. Yeah.
Exactly. So, well, I've lost my train of thought.
I was really, well, I'll pick it up for you. I was really impressed in Baltimore. I think that was where you guys debuted on Raw. And they really were, I thought the crowd was really into it. And they were chanting like a soccer chant, like a Mexican
Olé,
soccer
Olé,
chant.
Olé, yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting, considering that you might, you know, we don't even know if you, like, Generico wasn't even you.
Yeah, I don't know why they thought it was you. Why they chant that for
Well,
you?
Any way you cut it, that chant has been associated with me. Right. So, like, if they're chant, or, you know, a lot of the time. So they were chanting that in there, and that's a perfect example of, you know, that sort of, it follows us. It follows us now.
Like, I didn't know that. Like, I didn't know, like, I've seen your guys' names, but I didn't watch any stuff from Ring of Honor or from DDT or Dragon Gate. So I remember I even asked them, like, why are they chanting that? Or are they just, it's like, oh, it's because it's, like, associated with him. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
That there was a pretty sizable amount of those people in Baltimore that knew that.
Well, what's starting to be really funny is, and you wouldn't talk about the impact of NXT, is that, so NXT is a pretty smart audience, so that's what really started, like, loud Olé chants and whatever. But now, because of how successful and the fact that it's on the network, and not only that, but it's on TV in all these other countries, NXT, when we go to internationally, they're chanting Olé for me, but they have no idea about my past life. Like, they're just
see that
seeing
on the
it
show.
On the show, right? So a lot of the people that are chanting Olé in Baltimore are not the ones who, like, I saw him 6 years ago at the arena. Like,
it's
kids who are watching maybe NXT and, like, oh, it's Sami Zayn, Olé, Olé, Olé. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's getting over in a different way with a different audience that doesn't even know the background of it, which is really cool.
You're going to have the strangest gimmick ever. You're a redheaded Arabic French Canadian where they chant Olé, Olé, and you're wearing an old man's
God
felt
I'm
hat.
A freak. That's it. That's me, though. That sums it up.
So are you guys looking forward to December 11th, the single match?
Big time.
We've wrestled each other in, what is it, 14 countries?
Yeah, we're adding it up, I think, with this tour with Scotland and Northern.
Do you know the countries? Can you name some of them?
We could try.
Yeah, I could.
Let's see if you can name all 14.
Oh, no, you're asking.
Try. Well, let's see if you can name 10.
You know what? Hang on. I include Puerto Rico, so
it's
13/14. Yeah.
So we'll use that.
There's Canada, the States, Puerto Rico.
Portugal.
Japan. Portugal?
Did we do Portugal?
No.
All right, that was a lie.
Spain.
Germany.
Did I say England? I did, huh?
You didn't say England yet.
England, Ireland, North Ireland, Scotland.
That's 10.
Yeah, Romania, Bulgaria.
Wow.
Yeah, France.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're missing one there.
That's 13 already.
Yeah.
Did you guys do Romania, Bulgaria with this company?
No.
Okay. I was going to say, I don't think we've ever been there before, as far as I know.
We did.
I don't think so.
A company called American Wrestling Rampage. It was an Irish group.
Okay.
Still one of the best tours
we've
ever done, I think.
Yeah.
It was just a great experience.
All those lads, the Irish guys. The banter is just incredible.
It was called American Wrestling Rampage, but it was an Irish group that did it, right? So yeah, of course.
Obviously.
Come see the American wrestling. And so they were just the coolest guys. And they're friends of Finn Balor, who's now in NXT. He was Prince Devitt before. So it's like that crew of guys. They're all just such great guys.
Yep.
And there was like, who were the veteran WWE guys on that? There was RVD and Sabu.
Raven.
X-Pac. Yeah, Raven.
Oh, my gosh. How's Raven's the best.
Rene so Dupre. Nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. April Hunter was
Charlie Haas.
God. Yep. Yeah.
So there's quite a big crew, an experienced crew there.
Yeah, and it was like this sort of balance between these guys. And it's funny because that was another example of apparently I had like a ton of heat for being too comfortable. Like, who is this guy? I guess RVD told me like they thought Sid was on the tour for like 2 days.
Sid Vicious?
Yes, and apparently hurt his bicep or something and went home. And then by like, again, coincidence, I happened to be showing up. So they thought I was Sid's replacement. They're like, who is this guy? And like, I'm sitting in the back of the bus and I'm like singing
worst
songs.
Replacement ever.
Yeah, right. Like, so they eventually, within a few days, kind of came around to me, but it's just another case of like,
yeah, exactly.
Who the hell is this guy? Yeah, right.
So you guys, so that you worked on this tour, so you've worked around the world together, 14 countries, 13 countries, including Puerto Rico, which we know isn't a country, so don't hit me up and yell at me because we were establishing that already. Yeah. So now you get your chance on kind of the big stage, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
To show your wares.
You know, we are very close friends and we... like I say, we've known each other for so long, and we've had, well, what I feel were great matches in a lot of different spots. So that getting the chance to do it on NXT on the network, it's kind of, you know, full circle, and it's you know, a night that I'm very much looking forward to.
Now, do you guys in NXT are you both? Because in the four way, there was really no heel. Tyson was kind of a heel, but it was, I think, well, Tyler's kind of a heel, but it was just four guys. Is it the same? Are you guys heel or babyface or
well,
both?
I've been a little bit naughty recently.
Well, okay. Yeah.
So on NXT, you're more the heel in this situation.
And I think Sammy has such a following. You know, the fans really, really do love Sammy.
Great, okay.
And it's a great dynamic to play with.
It's not so much that he's been bad so much as he's done a few questionable things to sort of retain his championship at all costs. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, like, sort of Breaking Bad-ish situation in that there's not really, like, everyone's kind of good, but there's also like little.
Everyone's
kind of
bad,
a dick too. Like there's everything in there.
There's good
character
development. I really enjoyed. Like I said, I watched the whole pay per view. I keep saying pay per view. I mean special.
Yeah.
When you guys had the four way, and they showed like packages of you guys doing promos, and you were doing face to face promos, and that's very important too. Once again, because you're learning how to do that the WWE way.
Yeah.
You know, it was really good. I enjoyed that whole special. Thank you. Yeah. You know,
appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm excited to see the big one-on-one match between you guys.
Yeah.
Now, maybe if it ends in a tie, if it goes to a Broadway, you guys can just quiz each other to see who the winner is.
Like the buzz,
that's where I got like hooked on you guys. Like you guys were quizzing each other.
Just testing, you know, general knowledge.
We do all kinds of. I don't know if we're
playing with his toenails right now, which is kind of gross.
No, that's very inappropriate.
I'm just holding my foot.
Okay.
All right, I'll just put my foot down.
No, you can play with your toenails.
I'd rather no. It's inappropriate.
It's very addictive.
I'm a guest
I want
on the show.
Play with my toenails now. Adrian's going to take his shoes off so he can play with his toenails.
So don't.
Why
know,
am
put
I
even barefoot? Pigeonhole as Sami Zayn. We are friends, but I think we're associated a little bit too often, and I don't appreciate it.
Welcome to hell.
Welcome to hell. Okay, so tell us about the quiz. Like, let's do a little quizzing.
I don't know what it is, but I don't know if it's just we're highly competitive. And
we
are
very competitive.
I blame him. Mm-hmm. I do.
Oh, of course.
I really do.
It's obviously
genuinely, I do. Like, I just want to relax. Sammy, but he makes everything into this contest.
He's
so.
The little hen that never laid
an
egg.
Oh, get out of here.
Sammy is never in the wrong.
No, I totally am. When I'm wrong, I'm wrong. When I'm,
that's the first time I've heard
when
that.
I'm wrong, I'm wrong, you know? But
I've just never been wrong.
But he'll start things.
Oh.
Okay? He's the starter. But a lot of times it's just harmless fun. So this quiz off is an example. We're sitting on the bus and... you know, I don't know where we're going. Maybe one English town or another. We had a four-hour drive. And so he says, let's play Quiz Off, which is not a game, by the way.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist.
All right, Quiz Off.
I said, so what's Quiz Off? He's like, just, you know, general trivia, general knowledge. All right.
But the rules are you have to ask a question that will be in the realm of his knowledge.
Exactly.
Like, I can't ask him, like, this far-out question that he'll never know the answer.
Right.
He has to admit that he may know the answer and then attempt to answer.
Okay, well, let's try it. Like, you got, let's do it.
Oh,
pretend we're on the bus. Let's play Quiz Off.
Quiz Off.
But I must say, Quizoff is not the only one of our games. We have
so many,
a plethora of games.
Yeah. What are some of the other games?
Well, so we have some more conventional games, like, you know, we're
backstage pong, sometimes at those NXT shows, like, call time is 4 and the show's not till 7:30, so we'll help set up the ring and everything like that, so by 5 you're doing nothing. So we've played Pictionary,
hockey sack.
We were playing soccer for a while till we got banned.
Yeah, we got soccer banned at NXT.
Why did soccer get banned?
Just health and safety.
Without getting too specific.
Was the ball covered in Ebola? What are you talking about?
It was just, there was this, I don't even want to touch it. It's okay. Kind of a long story, right. But essentially we did nothing wrong, but it was just like, this could look bad, so just let's stay away from it.
An egg.
Okay, but nothing, what I'm trying to say is nothing bad happened.
Okay.
It was just.
Is it a situation like this? A couple of months ago, Kyoto and Primo were playing football in the arena. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there going over my match, like we're talking right now, and I happened to turn and the ball hit me right in the eye. Primo missed the catch, and it couldn't have hit me more perfect. Like the point of the football, American football, hit me right in the eye. And dude, I flipped out. I wanted to fight Kyoto. Yeah, I was yelling. I was like, "You son of a..." Like, just freak. I had Kyoto up against the railing, and Kyoto's yelling at me, and "F you," and "F you," and blah, blah, blah. And then I have to go to the doctor, and he's checking my eye. I'm like, this is the dumbest injury ever.
Yeah, it was in the arena. Like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's health and safety.
It was essentially like, how this might look bad.
Okay.
And so we don't want that. Like, gotcha. It's not something you would do at Raw, so don't do it here.
Okay, so it's soccer, it's hacky sack, it's Pictionary. You can play Pictionary.
Charades, just general charades.
We got charades going backstage, actually. All the boys would get involved.
Yeah.
Some epic games.
Ping pong became a huge thing. One of the venues had a ping pong table.
But I'd just like to say, Chris, that I am pretty much better than Sammy at everything.
Okay, not everything.
Wow. And I'd like to everything. also mention NHL 15.
The nerve on this guy to come on your show.
He said he's from Newcastle.
Exactly.
He's from England.
I'm a Brit and I beat him.
Wow, you're from Montreal.
I'm trying to restrain myself right now.
Uh-oh.
But.
Uh-oh, we might have December 11th might be taking a place right now, ladies and gentlemen. I'll commentate it live.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, he's got my number in ping pong. I beat him a handful of times, but he is better at ping pong. But, I mean, we could bring up darts.
Okay.
We can bring up NHL that I think I beat him in like 10 straight games at this point.
No, what? An absolute lie.
Anyways, we're pretty much evenly
matched.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
We've also created soccer tennis. Soccer tennis,
that's an original.
Yeah.
Well, I used to play it as a kid, but...
We go to a tennis court at my apartment complex or his, and we play tennis, but with your feet, with a soccer ball.
Wow.
It's pretty fun.
It's a bunch
I don't know.
Of
we
fun.
Just make up games and stuff. So Quiz Off was just...
It's the most recent.
Times sort of changed. You know, 10 years ago, guys were taking pills and getting loaded, and now you're playing Pictionary.
Yeah. You got to make it work. You know?
Absolutely.
Again, it's goes back to 10, 15 years ago. I might have been like, just
you'd have no
pills.
Eyebrows.
Yeah, exactly.
Taped up into the ceiling. Nasty boys shoving a bottle
up
your butt.
Hardcore Holly and JBL. Like, guys, you want to play Quiz Off?
Nasty boys. Why? Yeah. I got a quiz for you. Yeah. Let me stick this bottle up your ass.
Exactly. Yeah, times have changed, but in some ways, for the better. Yeah,
I want to play one round of Quiz Off, though. I want to see how you guys work your questions.
Oh, you see, you're really putting us on the spot now.
Well, I mean, just pretend that you're just playing it. Like, so remember yesterday, the other day, you were asking about temperature, like if you knew the difference between Fahrenheit and Celsius. And you said what was the question?
He didn't get it. I asked him.
We work on the metric system.
I said, everyone knows that
it's an unfair question.
Water.
What okay, about so the that's realm? Outside your realm.
What do you mean? You're on the metric system, England. England.
Yeah, but we don't use Fahrenheit. We use
exactly, but you live in America, as do I, a Canadian living in America. Mm-hmm. So I said water, everyone knows water freezes at a temperature of 0 and boils at 100 in the metric system.
Right.
But as a Canadian and as an Englishman.
Once the question had been answered, I think we admit how ridiculous the system was because they're just random numbers, like 36.
Yeah, but the point is, this is a question that you could know the answer to. It's within the realm of your knowledge.
But what is the answer? What was it?
The answer is snow or water freezes in Fahrenheit 32 degrees and boils at 212.
Look at that.
I hope that's right, actually, because somebody's going to like...
It's
actually 221. Yeah.
Hit us up on the Twitter if he's right or if he's wrong.
That voice has come up a lot, by the way, on the tour. The Eddie Murphy white guy voice. Well, actually, it's 212.
Yeah. That's always like kind of the go-to voice for the nerd who knows everything,
yeah, right.
Which is apparently all three of us as well. You know, it's like the other day when I saw the Jughead comic in your bag. That's another thing where I was like, I love this guy. Blatantly displayed a Jughead Jones. They were called Digests when
Correct.
I was a kid. the little Archie comics, they're thick. I used to buy those things.
Yeah.
I used to wait at the drugstore for them to come out. Like, I knew, okay, every second Tuesday, there's a new Archie.
Yeah,
and I would buy it. Yeah. And if we were going on a family trip, I would buy it and save it for the ride. You know, but you're still reading Archie comics.
Yeah, it's just great. I mean, I read them when I can. I have a stack of them at home. And then, like, I don't know, it's good, like, bathroom reading or just, like, on the road or I don't know what. I don't know why he put his hand over his forehead on that one, like covered his
head. Are you aware of Archie comics?
I've got no idea what you're
Archie
talking about.
Archie is it's a famous cartoon or comic, and Archie's a high school student. He's got red hair. Maybe that's why you empathize.
It's very funny because my whole, you know, growing up, I always thought I related the most to Jughead. Mm-hmm. Like, he wasn't really interested in chicks, which I wasn't until quite late. Like,
I wanted to be Jughead.
Me too.
I don't like girls.
Screw girls. Just
food.
Eat food and, yeah. Like, just lazy and,
crown.
Like, lives the life. You know, he's always relaxing.
He's wearing a crown.
Yeah, funny hat. So, like, I just really, really related to Jughead. But then I remember later in my life, I said, oh, my God, I'm Archie. Like, I realized that was Archie. It was a real revelation.
Yeah, and it's an Archie. He went to high school with his friends, Jughead.
Okay.
And he would always be a kind of in a romantic triangle with Betty, who was the sweet blonde, and Veronica, who was the raven-haired, black-haired, and she was rich. Veronica.
Really
Blanche.
Rich, yeah.
So she was kind of the rich, snotty chick.
So Betty was the baby.
Betty would be the one that you want to go for, but, okay. But Veronica.
Like, yeah. Like, you know, she's like the girl next door, but Veronica's the one you lust for. It was very profound in a way.
Much is, yeah. And there was a lot of, like, kind of. I remember, like, special Archies. I remember one where I think, like, Jughead got hit by a cement block or something. And he's in the hospital, like, he's in a coma, and it was called The Vigil. And I remember Archie was like,
comatose.
Yeah,
yes,
he's
yes,
like,
yes.
Please let my friend.
Yeah, they have
live.
Some heavy ones.
Yeah, this is deep.
It's pretty deep.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
It's honestly sort of like a throwback to the, like, you know, after school specials. Like,
right.
Sometimes they're like just fun and whatever and look what they're up to, but sometimes there's those really heavy episodes.
And there was Little Archie. That was when they were
kids. Love Little Archie. I love Little Archie. I love him. I love Little Archie. They're
like
so cute.
He had like the tic tac toe thing on the side of his hair. Yeah. Like, that was his hairstyle. Man. Now, you said that that Mrs. Grundy has passed away.
I can neither confirm nor deny this 100%, but what I've been told by a fellow Archie fan is I don't know if we have
by a fellow Archie aficionado.
I don't know if we have names like Archie Archaholics or whatever. Like, I don't know if there's a name for
Archie's
fans.
Anonymous.
But apparently what I've heard is that I'm out of the loop because all the ones, not only all the Archies I read, but all the movies, all the music. I mentioned this to you. Like, everything. I'm stuck in a time warp. Like, everything before the year 2000.
Along with your clothes.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right. So, like, I'm generally stuck somewhere between, like, 1965 and 95. But essentially, apparently, Miss Grundy has been killed off by cancer.
Wow. Now that's heavy.
And apparently there's a gay character that was introduced, which I know nothing about. But apparently Archie is going to die taking a bullet for this kid.
What?
Yeah, which seems awfully heavy. Like,
these are kids' comics, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know what's. I don't even know how you can have Archie comics without Archie.
I thought
Archie.
They were kids' comics.
Yeah,
he's proved me
obviously,
wrong.
Obviously,
look, Archie's going to die by taking a bullet for a gay guy.
This is just what I'm hearing. I can't confirm this.
This smells,
like,
funny. That I don't.
I have a feeling that we're going to get a lot of backlash on Twitter saying no,
or,
this isn't happening.
Like, or the Archie people are going to be like, what? How do they find out?
Or there's a major spoiler. Yeah,
yeah,
like,
there's a major spoiler. Maybe there needs a podcast. How do they know? Yeah. I'll be getting calls from Archie Comics Limited. We're going to put a cease and desist on your podcast.
Right.
You can't say that. Wow. So, who's your favorite? It was Jughead?
Like I said, I identified most with Jughead. But now I think as time went on, I realized I'm kind of Archie. Like, both somewhat with my relationship with women, but also with my, like, klutziness at times and, like, misunderstood and, like, the teachers hate them. And
do you have a jalopy?
Actually, I have a Nissan Altima that I have called Old Betsy, named after his jalopy. So that's the name of my car. Straight,
like,
off.
I feel like I'm 10 years old again. I haven't said or thought of the name Old Betsy since I was about 10 years old.
Yeah, that's my car, Old Betsy.
Yeah,
every car I've ever owned has been Old Betsy. So
that's it.
Yeah.
That's just the name.
Yeah.
I like Moose and Midge.
Stay away from my girl.
Beat you up. Which, like, I knew every dummy in high school, jock in high school.
Yeah, Reggie always making a move
on
Midge.
Reggie was the asshole.
What a guy.
Like, did you read any comics when you were a kid?
We used to have kids' comics called The Beano and The Dandy, but it wasn't just
what?
One. Bear with me. So
this sucks.
Sorry, go on.
But yeah, they weren't like one character. Like I imagine Archie is just one guy.
Yeah.
We had various characters throughout the comics. So you'd have, you know, like Dennis the Menace.
Okay.
And Billy Whiz and Roger the Dodger. Minnie the Minx.
I like Billy Whiz. That's a good one.
Stop scoffing at my comics.
Sorry.
He that just pisses all the time.
His gimmick was he runs really fast.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay.
So that could be a good name to pitch to creative office.
Billy Whiz.
But the being on the Desperate Dan. He was the big guy in the dandy. But anyway, these comics, they wouldn't deal with matters quite as deep as cancer and homosexual relations or whatever.
Taking a bullet.
It would be like, oh, Dennis has lost his cat.
No, but that's what Archie usually is. Archie usually makes a date with Betty and Veronica on the same night, and like, oh no, and he's bouncing from table to table, and then he gets caught, and he has no date.
It's like Three's Company.
Okay. Yeah, but Reggie's trying to screw him over.
Reggie's trying to stooge him off.
Yeah, it's specifically for Veronica.
Yeah, he always likes.
And meanwhile, Jughead just shaking his head, eating burgers at Pops.
Pops
chocolate shop.
Chocolate shop.
I think I still love it so much.
Oppe.
That's right. It just values everything that I love about like old school Americana, you know. That
I want to see a mashup with where Billy Whiz shows up at the pop shop and tries to steal.
Guys, yeah.
Last question. You guys have had so many matches, and I always like to ask my guests this: what's your favorite match that you've ever had?
Oh my!
Or a few of them. It doesn't have to be any point in your career. You've got 13 years.
One for me would certainly be
ten years.
It was the first match we had on the aforementioned AWR tour. It was in France.
Me and you, yeah, of course.
It was when Sammy joined the tour late and replaced Sid Vicious.
Sid Vicious is not here, but Sami Zayn is the replacement. You can get your refunds before the end of the first match.
I'm not sure what town it was. I think it was...
It was not. I want to say Nantes.
Okay, yeah, Nantes? That makes sense.
Nantes, France.
N-A-N-T-E?
Yes.
Well, I don't think I've ever been there before.
Yeah.
You guys had a single match?
Yeah, we
had a singles match, and it was...
There's kind of a funny story about that, too, isn't there? About after the match.
Yeah, but the match itself, like we were saying before, it was all to do with the interaction, the audience's response.
Great crowd.
And it was, you know, it was super fun to be in there. There was no real pressure. We just went out there and had our match. I guess
I'll tell this story without trying to offend the person in question, but basically we had this match. And Raven was backstage, and he watched the match, and it was really like it was good. It was we've wrestled a lot. It was one of our really good ones.
Right.
And he goes, guys, God, that was tremendous match. Wow, I mean,
great match.
Yeah, there were a couple little things, and I'll talk to you about it after if you want to hear it. But God, great match. And so we'd never been to WWE. We'd never been to any sort of anywhere with this sort of thing this is the first time we got introduced to someone trying to kind of agent our match.
Okay.
So what happened is we get back and then Raven, like what we thought was a great match, systematically picks it apart. Now I'm thinking, God, I don't know if this match was that good. So we try the next night to do sort of the match, but with his, or a different match, but with his sort of criticism. The match gets worse. And then he criticizes that match. So then the next night we go out and try to correct it again. It gets worse.
It's like Inception. You're just getting, what level are we at? Yeah. You're just getting deeper and deeper.
Exactly.
And
just progressively is getting worse. So by the fourth night, we like, and again, there's nothing against Raven. He has a great mind and everything, but just wasn't working for us. So by the fourth night, like to not offend him, we went to the other end of the arena and like called the match, or like talked about stuff we might do in a broom closet, just to like as far away as possible to just not.
Lock, bolt.
Yeah, exactly.
Chair under the doorknob.
So it was, but that was one of my favorites. There was also our first. I think it was
I was going to say
California.
The PWG one was very, very memorable for me because it was my first weekend in the States. I think I was 19 years old, maybe 20 years old, and it was back in 2006. And it was my first sort of opportunity out there on the West Coast in California for PWG.
Is that like in LA or something? Or
it is in Reseda, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Reseda. And
we'd
wrestled twice in Europe the previous week. Was it the week
England
before?
And Germany maybe?
But it was fairly recently, and then we had our match in PWG and you know, I didn't expect the response it got, and it was really quite eye opening to me.
That people knew you and
They didn't necessarily know me, but they by the end of the match, they certainly... Certainly,
he got over.
Kid got over.
So that's a great memory for me, and you know,
that's great, man.
A lot of it
of our matches, I would say those are probably two. There was like also, I think we worked each other in Japan, and that was just kind of special. Just you know,
just
Japan.
Recently.
Yeah. The Tokyo
the WWE tour. That was
sold out. Sumo Hall tore it up. Hogan watches. He's like, you guys tore it up, brother.
That's great.
And Hogan's my hero from when I was a kid. And actually, another match. Not with Neville, but another match is the Cesaro match at Arrival, the first NXT special. A big reason that was also so special for me is because Bret Hart was there, and I don't know if he'd really known my work or not, but he was another huge hero of mine. Triple H obviously is the boss, but you know, so I want to impress him any opportunity I can, but also because I respect the hell out of him as far as a mind. And you know, Shawn Michaels is there, and Cena are there, and all these guys are there as like, you know, this is the first special, like, so they had all these guests. So, and it was, me and Cesaro had all these stories, and he's one of my best opponents. I was like, the stars are aligned. I'm going to kill it tonight. And we did, and Bret Hart, like, loved it. And that, like, meant the world to me because, I grew up idolizing this guy, you know. So I think we talked about it a little at some point on this tour, just those moments in life where, and kind of even for Neville, like, going back to Newcastle and, like, now they know him. And, like, he's been a fan his whole life, but now they're putting him over.
Right, same
way, but you were telling us all these great stories about meeting Keith Richards and Axl Rose and, like, basically meeting your heroes, but now your peers.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Or they admire your work as well. That's, like, a really... For me, that's like those little, like, I made it in life
that's
moments,
the true sign
you know?
Of making it.
Exactly.
When you have respect from your peers.
Yes.
And your heroes.
Heroes, yes.
Are your peers as well.
Yeah, I agreed. So those are real special moments for me and real special nights for me.
Well, it's going to be a special night, December 11th,
yeah.
with the R Evolution, which is also Revolution.
Yeah.
Get the network. And this is one of my things about the network. They always say it's $9.99 or it's free, but they never really tell you a lot of times what's on the network.
Yeah.
We're telling you this match is going to be a huge match for you guys.
Absolutely.
You got something to prove after working 14 countries
against
each other. So I'm going to be watching it on December 11th, and you guys should watch it too. And you guys are great, man. You guys are it's fun to talk to you guys, and you guys are killing it on this tour, and the future's in good hands, guys.
Thank you, man.
Just gotta get rid of that stupid hat.
Well, just maybe give it some time, it'll grow on you.
Actually,
you know
what? If that becomes a merch item, I swear to you, I will buy one.
Right.
And I will wear it. But I'll wear it backwards.
Oh, no. You don't want to be that
guy.
Okay,
I'll wear it forwards.
There
then.
You go.
Jeez, man, I can't get anything from you. All right, I will buy the Sami Zayn hat.
There it is. You heard it here.
Thank you.
Thanks to Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville. What a couple characters they are. I'm really excited to see them battle it out in the ring at the WWE NXT TakeOver R Evolution live event on December 11th on the WWE Network. It's going to be worth your $9.99 per month subscription, so go check it out. Again, that's live on WWE Network on December 11th. You're not going to want to miss this match. You can hear the passion in Adrian and Sami's voices, the fact they're such great friends. They work so well together. They've got great chemistry. This is going to be a match for the ages. Thank you to them for doing the show. Thanks for Jeff Rouse as well for being with us and giving us all of his great stories, and a very, very cool guy that he is. And thanks to you for listening to this show. I know that there's thousands of podcasts to schwaz from, and I appreciate your schwaz in mine, and I appreciate you you helping me with this show on Amazon. I know you're trying to finish up your holiday shopping. Things are going to get down to the wire, and you know where you can do that. Amazon, of course. And you know how to use my links through Talk is Jericho, right? Come on, say it with me. Just go to, here we go, podcastone.com. Say it again, podcastone.com, and click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then click on Talk is Jericho. You see all three of my Amazon links in the UK, the USA, and the Canada. I bet there's someone on your gift-giving list who would love to have the new Fozzer record, Do You Want to Start a War? Or my new book, The Best in the World at What? I have no idea. Or how about Paul Stanley's book? That would be a good one. Paul Stanley sure would be a good guest on this show. Huh, that's called foreshadowing, kids. No matter what you buy, if you do it through my Amazon links, Amazon will kick back a little cash to this show so we can keep doing it for you for free for twice a week. I love doing this show. I love talking to my friends. I love making friends through the show. I love the fact that you guys are digging it. Remember, there's no extra fees or hidden challenges if you do your shopping on Amazon. You're just getting it done and helping me out in the process. It's the easiest way to support this show. So I thank you so much for being here. That was a great, great episode. Next week, who's the guest for next week? I'll tell you who it is. It's a two-parter. It's one of the most requested guys. I keep bringing you the guests, all right? I don't got controversy on my show. I'm not giving you the Vince McMahon, but I'm giving you the best guests that you got, baby.
because next week on this show, two-part interview with Dean Ambrose. Yeah, enough said. It is amazing. You're going to hear two parts with Dean Ambrose because you requested it. I always give the people what they want. All right, that's next week. But in the meantime and in between time, that's it. Another edition of Talk is Jericho. Stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. And a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.